You are listening to Help for HD Live, the first podcast created for families living with Huntington's and juvenile Huntington's disease. Don't forget to find us on iTunes, Blog Talk, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. You can also search over 500 archived episodes and other projects at helpforhd.org. To watch us in person, find Help for HD TV on YouTube and subscribe and ring the bell for notifications on new content. Help for HD Live is going on air in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in to Help for HD Live. This show is made possible because of a grant from Teva Pharmaceuticals and the Griffin Foundation. I'm your host, Lauren Holder, and today we have two guests with us. They are Dr. Julie Stout and Corey Wasser. Dr. Julie Stout has been on with us before. She is head of aging and neurodegeneration at the Turner Institute of Brain and Mental Health at Monash University. She's also director of Zendometrics, formerly Stout Neuropsych, a spin-out company that provides pharmaceutical sponsors with an assessment platform and services for cognitive assessment in clinical trials. She's internationally recognized for her work characterizing the decline in cognition in Huntington's disease beginning 10 to 15 years before diagnosis and progressing throughout symptomatic disease. Based on this work, she led the development of the HD-CAB, a standardized cognitive battery fit for purpose of clinical trials, which has now become the industry standard. Funding Julie Stout's research work is diverse, including international NIH, Australian Philanthropic CHDI, as well as commercial sources. She's chair of the Scientific Oversight Committee of Enroll-HD, a natural history study of more than 19,000 people from HD families, which most of us know about and are in. Corey is a registered provisional psychologist and is in the months of completing his doctorate in clinical neuropsychology at Monash University. Corey's research project is focused on characterizing the gut microbiome in HD and explores the efficacy of probiotics to improve the gut microbiome and HD symptoms, which is what we're going to explore today. Corey also works as a teaching associate and is the research project manager of the Monash HD Research Participant Database. So, guys, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks.
And how is it over in Australia right now?
Well, it's we're well into spring. The sky is blue, and we've all just been let out of our houses because our COVID numbers are very low because everyone's wearing masks. So we're all feeling quite good here. Thanks.
Absolutely. So I'm pretty sure I asked you this question last time, Dr. Stout. But if you would answer it again for us, why Huntington's disease?
Yeah, sure. But when I was a postdoc back in the 1990s in San Diego, at the University of California, San Diego, that was right when the gene for HD had been identified in 1993. I didn't work on that, but I happened to be around right at that time, and I was just beginning to learn about HD. And I was seeing patients as a clinical neuropsychologist, and what I was really struck by when I was working with Huntington's patients was the impact on families, the fact that, you know, it's just not a single person who's affected, but it's a whole family and, you know, the generations before and the generations to come. And I think, you know, probably on a personal level, that was something that really struck me and captured my interest and attention and helped me to kind of build commitment, because I guess, I mean, all of us have families, and it was easy to identify how devastating a disease like this could be that runs through families. And it also just happened to be such an interesting time to be working on Huntington's disease. I mean, in the time since then, the past 25 years, so much has happened in terms of our understanding of the disease and now these really exciting treatments. And so it's, you know, we want this thing to go away, but it's kind of, it's got so much, there's so many interesting aspects of it in terms of just the family aspects, the social aspects, and then all these, you know, novel, you know, state-of-the-art treatments that are being developed. So yeah, this is, you know, what's kind of gotten me into it and kept me in.
And Corey, what about you? Why HD?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think when I first started, I didn't actually really know a lot about PhD when I first started, just as an assistant. But as I started learning about and completing my my original honors project, I think I was just really inspired by some of the families that I became in contact with. And as I suppose I worked more and more into it, I got I've always felt like I wanted to keep working in HD, and maybe a lot of that inspiration comes from Julie and the way that she talks about HD. But I think we just keep learning and knowing so much more about it, and I feel like there's just a lot more to do. So I think that's really why I suppose wanted to stay in HD research, even though I didn't know much when I started.
Well, we're glad to have you, for sure. We definitely need as many researchers as possible to help us find good treatments and, you know, what's going on in order for us to have better quality of life. You know, we always want to say a cure, but along the way, it's about quality of life as well. And the more you find out about it, the better quality of life you can have. So let's see. So today we're going to be talking about the gut and Huntington's. So can you tell us a little bit about your research and what it entails?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'll go for that one. So basically what we want to do is really just to try and look at the gut in Huntington's disease. I suppose the reason why we want to do that is because we've known for many years now that basically that the gut and brain are related to each other or affect each other in some manner, but it hasn't really been explored in Huntington's disease. But in the last few years or so, we've learned a lot more about it in other diseases like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, etc. And it does seem that there is a bit of a strong link between the gut and the brain there. So it's something that we thought really should be investigated in Huntington's disease. The other reason why as well is that in HD, there are some people do experience gastrointestinal symptoms and things like that as well. And we also know that the Huntington gene is expressed throughout the body, so it's not something that just affects the brain, and we know that it's in the gut as well. So it seemed like, I suppose, a really good thing to investigate, given that we think that things in the gut might affect the brain and vice versa. So that's really, I suppose, the main reason why we wanted to look at that for the first time in people with HD.
So what kind of, you just mentioned that people with HD tend to have stomach issues, basically, you know, and gastrointestinal symptoms. So what does that mean? Like, what symptoms do we, what would we see in Huntington's?
Sure. Yeah, that's a good question. So it's not, I suppose it's not like a hallmark clinical feature like some of the other symptoms that you might consider, but particularly in later stages of Huntington's disease, a lot of people might have trouble with maintaining weight, or they might have some gastrointestinal issues like diarrhea or constipation or things like that, or esophagitis. So a few types of clinical symptoms as well. But what we do see, particularly in the later stages of HD, is difficulties just maintaining weight or chronic muscle wasting, which can be a really big issue for patients' quality of life, but also just for physicians to manage as well, because it can be really, and it can lead to other complications as well. Like if you've got a lot of nutrient deficiencies, it can just cause other complications. So, and we know that the gut and the gastrointestinal system basically modulate that whole process. I suppose understanding whether the gut is affected in HD could be really helpful to kind of explain that or perhaps enhance patients' quality of life.
Oh, absolutely. Especially for those of us who are caregivers and not realizing that that could be a, you know, late stage issue. And it explains a lot for me, actually, for my dad. So, yeah, that's very interesting. So what have you learned from this research?
Okay, so I think what we did, I'll just quickly explain what we did, because so what we want to do is really just basically sequence the gut and basically get a sense of all those different types of bacteria in there. And we compared that to people that don't have the HD that don't have the HD gene. And the way that we did that is we got all participants to supply fecal samples. And then so what we did, so me and some other colleagues in the lab, we basically have to deal with those samples and then send them off and get them analyzed. And then that gives you a really good sense of what we call the gut microbiome. So basically just the environment within the gut. And so that actually has a lot of different measures that can be derived from that. But I suppose we showed is that in people with the HCV gene, so people that are both symptomatic, that started showing symptoms, or people that don't have symptoms, we basically showed a few characteristic differences between people with HCV and those without. So what we showed in summary is basically that the gut is less rich, so there's less bacteria in the gut in people with HCV. But also it seems to be structurally different as well. So the bacteria that makes up the gut microbiome seems to be different in people with HCV compared to matched healthy control participants. And we also were able to link certain bacteria in the gut to HCV symptoms, so to things like cognition, so thinking skills, so just memory, but also to motor symptoms as well. It was associated with HCV motor symptoms, some of the bacteria in the gut, and also that it seemed to be also related to the estimated disease onset. So if we could, what we did is we basically could associate certain bacteria with future prediction of HCV. It's a mathematical formula, so it doesn't necessarily mean that the bacteria might cause progression, but it's just an interesting association that probably could be investigated a bit further.
Absolutely. That is extremely interesting. And I mean, just another avenue. You know, that's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you.
So what are your next steps with this?
So I think the first thing is that the study that we've done, which is myself and others, is really just only the first study in humans with HCV. So it certainly needs to be replicated, or perhaps with larger sample sizes and things like that. So we think that's definitely a stronger sense of everything that's going on, because if with a lot of future studies we can really, I suppose, characterize how HCV affects the gut and what are kind of like signature HCV differences, then that will give us a really strong sense of looking at towards treatment targets or searching for things like biomarkers and things like that. Things that can really be important in terms of, enhancing the quality of life or in people with HCV, or even looking for treatments and things like that as well.
And I might just add to this too, if I could. So a really interesting thing about the gut too is that it's possible that by manipulating what's in the gut in terms of the balance of the different bacteria, might be able to affect what's happening in the brain. So, you know, we know that, what's happening in the gut is related to the symptoms that are related to the brain, like the motor symptoms and the cognitive symptoms and so on. And so you have to ask the question, if we improve the functioning of the gut, can we then improve the functioning, of the brain and reduce symptomatology? So another thing that Corey did, which he hasn't told you about, is he actually did a study looking at probiotics, because probiotics have the possibility of changing the balance of these different bacteria that are in the gut. It's very complicated what's going on in the gut, because it's really not about one type of bacteria or another. It's about what the whole gut bacterial environment is like. And there are some bacteria that are sort of associated with like when you have a high level of them, it's associated with more problematic symptoms. There are some that you want to have a high level of, and even in that regard, not that much is understood. So it's this very complex environment. And when, we send off these poo samples to get analyzed, you get, thousands of measures coming back. So everybody's still grappling with, how do you deal with these data? But one question is, if you can take a probiotic, or possibly we think maybe a prebiotic, which we didn't test, and put that into the gut, manipulate the constitution of what's in there, then can you influence the symptoms? And so this is great, because, imagine if we could do that, what a simple treatment it would be. So, we have all these complex treatments that are being studied right now, and they're going in through, directly into the brain or into the spinal fluid. Imagine if you could just do something that, changes the flora in your gut. Right. So this is something we're also really interested in, is whether it might be a pathway to manipulate the symptoms and potentially the disease itself. We're a long way from knowing that, but it's a very appealing possibility. So Corey has looked at, he's done a probiotic clinical trial. The probiotic clinical trial did not yield any changes in the gut or in changes in the symptoms, but there are lots of different probiotics and different formulations and so on. And there's also prebiotics, which, kind of have some different activities. So there's a lot more work to be done, both just to understand, you know, what makes a good gut, what makes a brain healthy gut, okay? And then how should we try and manipulate it so that it can help to reduce symptomatology and potentially change disease progression as well. It's just the very, very beginning of a big, big area of research that I think we'll see developing over the next, you know, 20 years.
Yeah, well, and that's amazing. Like you said, what makes a brain healthy gut? And for us, that, I mean, we need to know that. Do you know, what do we change?
Yeah.
What, and if we could pick up something, like you said, as simple as a probiotic over the counter compared to having, you know, all this, that would be huge,
yeah,
for the Huntington community, provide,
yeah,
quality of life. So this research is going to be just amazing to watch. So I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
So what recommendations, well, here, let me ask this question first. So is there a way that maybe you guys could pair with something like Enroll to get the amount of participants you need to be able to?
You mean the amount of poo?
Yeah.
Yeah. You need a lot of poo samples.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To study what you need.
Yeah. Look, I think potentially that is something that will, you know, is possible in the future. And, you know, a study like Enroll, as you know, it's huge. It's a big, huge thing. And you don't make changes to it without having good reason. So you need studies like CORI's because they provide the first evidence to start kind of creating some intrigue around the possibilities. I think probably the next step is to do it in a bigger sample, maybe in, you know, 400 people or something like that. Because once we can do that, we can really hone in on what needs to be done. That's time to go knock on the door of Enroll and say, if we can sample these kind of, you know, participants, get this much, you know, fecal matter, process it in this way, and so on. So, definitely Enroll, it has a lot of potential. And I know that the CHDI Foundation that funds Enroll is very interested in this. But of course, you know, they'll maybe wait and watch, maybe even support work that will create the foundation to be able to make decisions about where to take this in the future. So I suppose right now, you know, as Corey has said, you know, it's just, you know, very first bit of evidence. There's also now, there's an animal study that was just published in this past week as well from Maria Borkvist's lab in at Lund, and it's on the R62 mouse model, also a gut study. Tony Hannon, who's a colleague of ours here in Melbourne, he and Geraldine Kong published some really intriguing work on mouse model as well. So we've just kind of built up a body of evidence, you know, over a couple of years, I suppose, to try and figure out where to take this, what its potential is. And, you know, it's kind of a bit of a whole new world in this part of the research. I think the other thing I did want to mention is just that I think what's really important about the gut, too, is gut is something affected by our lifestyle, okay? So we, you know, exercise influences the gut, and your health, you know, what you eat influences the gut. There are, of course, genetic variations, people who eat different types of diets, different ethnic backgrounds, who have maybe spicy or bland diets, all these sorts of things can have an effect. And all of that brings complexity into studying the human gut. That's why if you study mice, you know, you can give them exactly what you want them to have, and you can make their, you know, you can really control what's in their gut. But in humans, there are really so many factors. But we know that a lot of those factors are under our personal control. They're based on our personal choices. So what would be really interesting is if we could figure out how to use, how to manipulate the gut through the life, you know, through lifestyle changes in terms of what people eat, their physical activity, and things like that, in order to, you know, use that as sort of like lifestyle treatment that could affect the way the brain's functioning. And, you know, these are the kind of things that, you know, there's a big field out there outside of HD and outside of, you know, just in the healthy population, just trying to understand what, you know, it's like a kind of a new frontier in medicine, really. And so, you know, we've all been hearing a lot about the gut and the microbiome and all that sort of thing for the past couple of years. But I think you'll see that over the next 10 years, you know, there's a lot more that will be discovered. But I would say watch this space, because this is a place in the body that's under our personal control. You know, there's not a lot we can do to change the way our brains are you know, are acting. I mean, we can eat healthy for that too, and keep the brain healthier. But, you know, there's going to be a lot that we can learn about how we have some control over what's happening in our gut, and that it can, might, you know, possibly have an impact on the way the disease acts. And so we just don't know enough to tell people what they should be doing, you know. And then we revert back to just saying, eat healthy, you know.
Right, but that's, I mean, I'm so glad they brought that up, because that was going to be, you know, in the meantime, what do we do? Well, we know that diet and things affect the gut already. Like, that's just, we know that.
Yeah.
So why not try it in the meantime until you guys, I mean, you get more results, and it doesn't hurt anybody to eat healthier.
Yeah.
Can
right.
only
that's
help.
Right.
Says the person who prefers ice cream over everything.
Oh, wait, yeah.
But hopefully you find that ice cream is a cure-all.
Right. It's part of an important lifestyle, you know, as well.
You know, but I think that is just what you just said is so important about realizing that the things that you put in your gut make a difference.
Yeah.
And so, like you said, it's our choice as to what we do with that, and using that information. Mm-hmm. So while in the meantime we're waiting on definitive stuff, there's stuff we could still be doing.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, did you have any final thoughts for the Huntington's community?
Well, there is probably one thing I would like to say, just to put this in perspective, which is, I think, you know, it's such an exciting time for us right now with the clinical trials that are going on. But right now, we're still so much at the beginning. And I think when the first treatments become available, they're not necessarily going to be right for everyone. And they're also not going to be, they won't be available to everyone in the world who has HD, which is, you know, something we really have to grapple with, because it's not okay that we get a great treatment, but, you know, you can't give it to kids, or, you know, you can't give it to people who are too advanced, or, you know, there's no way to get it to someone in some part of Africa. You know, this is not okay. So we have to realize that all these clinical trials that are going on, even if they yield something great, which they certainly might do, it's not going to solve the problem of HD. HD is going to be around. So something like the work on the gut and all the lifestyle work that we can do is really important, because we've got to realize that we can't leave anybody behind in the treatments. And, you know, treatments that have to do more with, you know, simple things like probiotics or exercise or lifestyle changes are things that can be available more broadly. So I just think it's important in this really exciting period of optimism to realize that these exciting clinical trials that are going on are not the solution for everyone. And it's going to be a long time before we have something for everyone. And so we must continue to push on to figure out how to bring, you know, lifestyle changes to people so they have control of their own lives. Not only that, how to best care for and, you know, and look after all the different needs that people have who are affected by HD. Their social needs, do they have enough money, you know, can they get residential care if they need residential care, and so on. So we've got to keep our perspective a bit broader, even at a time like this when we're so excited about what's happening with all the these new drugs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Corey, did you have any final thoughts for us?
I think for me personally, I mean, I just think it definitely is really exciting, but it's and we are learning more and more, which is really exciting. In particular, for the gut, for me, I think there is a lot more that we can do, and that we are really just getting started. So, but I think I just think it is really cool and really exciting, and that there are certainly, you know, there's definitely a lot of things that we can do, and I know I've got a lot of ideas in my head about what are the next steps. But, you know, it might take a bit of time, but I think that it is kind of just another exciting avenue and just another different pathway. So, well, that we can look at, along with all the other amazing treatments and some of the clinical trials that really do seem quite promising.
Absolutely. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on to the show and talking with us and sharing this amazing research. Again, I'm just so excited about it. And we'll definitely have to follow up in the future and see where things are going. And thank you again for joining me and getting on Zoom and doing this call all the way from Australia.
Thanks so much for having us, Lauren.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us.
Everybody take care.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to visit www.help4hd.org and sign up for our email newsletter to stay up to date on all that is going on at Help for HD. Get social with us and like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and subscribe to Help for HD TV on YouTube, and ring the bell for notifications.